Hello, this is Sue Lloyd, Vice Chair of the ISSB, and I'm here with our Chair, Emmanuel Faber, and we're recording this session in Frankfurt following our September Board Week. So our podcast is really going to focus on two key areas today: updates on developments in some jurisdictions, on the use of our standards, and some insights from the meeting we had this week here in Frankfurt. But first of all, Emmanuel, we've recently held a public webinar on the importance of industry-based disclosure, a really important topic here at the ISSB and really relevant actually to the board discussions we've been having this week. So maybe it's good to start with some thoughts on that front from you.
Sure. Thank you, Sue. Welcome everyone to this podcast. Yeah, I think this webinar was really timely, and we will speak more about this when we discuss about today's and this week's work for the board. I think my reflections would be that the webinar was hammering important aspects, including the fact that we're convinced that issues that are most likely to affect prospects, future prospects of a company and its financial performance, actually vary by industry. And therefore, the industry-based SASB standards are an important component of the ISSB's global baseline. They're actually, as we've consistently said, and are getting feedback about, the only established suite of industry standards for sustainability disclosures globally, in particular focused on investor and financial materiality. So as we all know, ISSB has been prioritizing the maintenance and the enhancements of SASB standards as part of our current new agenda of work. And I think the webinar demonstrated the market support for others to also ensure that the prioritization of our industries can be put at work to reduce the disclosure burden. And that's the case with EFRAG that is starting right now, pending the new commission's confirmations of that work, their industry-related work, and building from the fact that they have already authorizing the use of SASB standards to fulfill the ESRS in the absence of properly developed EU standards. And the other thing was, of course, highlighted in the webinar, was the importance of the ISSB work with GRI to deliver full direct interoperability, which will cover both thematic but also industry-based disclosure requirements. So in many ways, both of these aspects of interoperability will be tested for real, and we got real support in the webinars about how important that was for our stakeholders, which I think is obviously something we'll discuss again when we discuss about this week's work. Before we come to that, I think you highlighted the fact that since we last had this podcast on the other side of summer, a number of things have happened, in particular in August, in a variety of jurisdictions. And maybe I think it would be interesting, Sue, that you tell us a bit more about this.
Yeah, and I think I'm just going to start talking about some of the things I've been doing in the last 6 or 8 weeks. So the European summer, but I went to visit the Antipodean winter. And went down under. So I took the opportunity of being home in New Zealand to do some outreach while I was there. So while I was in Sydney and Melbourne, spent some time with stakeholders there, and it was a great time to be there because the Australian Accounting Standards Board was on the cusp of making really important decisions about what they would do on climate reporting there, and really fantastic to hear their decisions and the market support there for moving closer to the ISSB standards following the feedback they got on their consultation. So that was really great to see global comparability in action, really. Mm. New Zealand, of course, my home, was the first jurisdiction in the world actually to mandate climate reporting, introducing the TCFD recommendations into requirements there, which of course form the basis for the ISSB standards as well. So interesting to talk to stakeholders in New Zealand about the initial experience in implementing climate-related disclosures there. Then I came back and went to Brazil. An exciting time there, of course, with the decisions there being made, with Brazil showing such leadership in the decisions to adopt IFRS S1 and S2 in the region, leading to others in the region considering the adoption of our standards as well. So it was great to talk to companies about you know, the really practical things they're thinking about when they are looking to implement the standards, and actually really heartening to speak to a number of companies who are really seeing the strategic benefits of thinking through their risks and opportunities, not just for reporting, but to really dig into details and uncover what is important to think about in their business and then to communicate to investors. So that was good as well. We're also seeing other developments, I think, progress with Hong Kong making announcements on their consultation to align with S1 and S2 as well. That's now, I think, open for comment, which is great to see. So just lots of action and actually closer to home. In the last week, I've been in Budapest and Rome and talking to people about the experience applying CSRD alongside the ISSB standards as well, and really interesting to see just a huge level of engagement everywhere. But Emmanuel, what about other jurisdictions and the plans that we're hearing about?
Yeah, thank you, Sue. Well, just echoing what you just said lastly about Budapest and Rome, I had the same experience here in Frankfurt and as well as in Paris actually recently with a number of preparers. We unpacked in 2 hours in-person conversations the 30-page interoperability guidance that we jointly issued with EFRAG and the European Commission in May. And it's really impressive how this document shows how companies can actually usefully navigate from one standard to the other. So I would simply echo that for those companies that want to have and use a language of the global baseline that is decision useful for investors, they can extract their ESRS data through that tool in a manner that is cost effective. And of course, paying attention to the finalization of the digital taxonomy of ESRS as we finalize ours, in order to ensure that, as we, I think, on both sides, on the European and our side, hope that most of the machine of that thing can be done through machine readable mechanisms. But sorry for the dive on this for a second, but that was interesting conversations as well, actually with investors here in Europe that continue to say that beyond the CSRD mechanisms, ISSB is critical for them in terms of decisions here in Europe from European companies. And I think we should expect that more will come on those. Beyond this important aspect of our work here in Europe and for European stakeholders, we continue to see a growing trend in Africa, Central and South America. Latest jurisdictions include Chile, El Salvador, Ghana, Uganda, Tanzania. I know three more as well, African jurisdictions wanting to join. And I think the reason is because they see an opportunity to unlock capital flows and establish transparency within their value chains that will ultimately benefit the microeconomics and therefore the macroeconomics of those jurisdictions. And obviously, for all these newcomers, we continue to work very closely with our partners in jurisdictions to support implementation as market build capacity ahead of adoption. And spoiler alert, we will announce in the next couple of months very structuring agreements and partnerships to ensure that capacity building and that this new cohort of countries are properly welcomed in their pathways and supported in their adoption pathways. Maybe even much closer to us here in Frankfurt, Switzerland is another jurisdiction that has started consulting during summer with a consultation that is open for comment until the 17th of October. Which provides a very interesting example because the Swiss government is considering requiring ISSB plus GRI standards to meet investor and broader stakeholder information needs in parallel of potential ESRS requirements. So I think it's an interesting test on how this interoperability mechanism that we've been so actively working on might actually provide direct value to preparers and investors in the Swiss context. I alluded to a couple of times the CSRD. So the EU is to decide by June 26 how companies based outside of the EU and not within the initial scope of CSRD will be required to meet CSRD in 2028, so some time to come. And EFRAG also expects to issue exposure draft in Q1 25 on standards for non-EU companies to meet its deadline. I think, you know, as I just said, the commission is now in progress of being set up, and we will see more clarity on the deadlines and the priorities for EFRAG in the next couple of months, rather. But, you know, growing support for the Swiss model to inform the construction of the future ESRS is gathering, and I think it's important time for market to engage in those conversations.
So that's the global baseline. Let's now move over to building the global baseline and further enhancing it. So this week at our board meeting, we've really been progressing some of the discussions that are the early stages of us seeing our new work plan coming to life. So the work on enhancing the content in the SASB standards and our new research projects on nature and human capital. And we started the week, I think, really fittingly with an investor perspective on the new work plan, given that we get up in the morning to write standards to meet investor information needs. Always great to hear from our ultimate customers about our work. And we're super fortunate at the IFRS Foundation to have really inherited a group from the Value Reporting Foundation, the IIAG, which is a group of leading asset owners and asset managers from around the world who are really committed to improving the quality and the comparability of sustainability-related financial disclosures. And they're a really important consultative group for us. They provide strategic guidance for us when we're developing our standards and also really make us stay focused on meeting this investor perspective, making sure it's really clearly articulated and considered in our standard-setting work. And a really big thank you to the leadership of the IIAG, the chair, Karina Smith-Ayanasho from Norges Bank Investment Management. She's the chief governance and compliance officer there, and the vice chair, Jonathan Bailey, who's the global head of ESG and impact investing at Neuberger Berman. And of course, the thanks to Richard Manley, who was until very recently the chair of this group, who's the chief sustainability officer at CPP Investments. He's finished his role leading this group, but I know we can continue to count on his support. So this morning we started our board discussions with Jonathan visiting us in person in Frankfurt, where he shared his personal perspective as an investor on our work plan and gave us some sort of insights into his views on how investors use information related to human capital and nature, which is, I think, a fabulous setting for starting this research that we're doing. And he really emphasised the need for material information for investors, the information they really need to make decisions, not everything you might want, you know, be interested in, but the stuff that's really critical. And really emphasised in that the role of industry-specific or industry-based disclosures to really surface the key things that people need to understand to make investment decisions and the key metrics. Encouraged us to build on the SASB standards that we inherited through the Value Reporting Foundation consolidation, given that they are used widely around the world and they do have this industry-specific focus, which is really helpful for investors. He commented on the importance of the role of continuing voluntary use of our standards, in, even in jurisdictions that have not made regulatory decisions to use our standards, such as in the US, because investors still need the information. Companies still need to communicate. And really emphasised how material information for investors on topics like nature is really likely to vary by industry, much more so than it did for climate. And then he just talked to us really a lot about the practical challenges for investors of having to make do with the information they can get at the moment and how they fill in gaps and how he hopes that our work will help us get more information more directly to investors so they don't have to fill in so many gaps and sort of use AI and other means to try and backfill information. So I think a really useful investor perspective to frame the rest of our discussions. And Emmanuel, maybe you could start with our discussions on how we can utilize the SASB standards.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Sue, and echoing what you said in thanking Jonathan and his colleagues in the leadership of the IIAG for the incredible support and advice that we received from them. And, you know, the one point that I'd like to just start with, on this industry-based and the SASB standards enhancement that we discussed today is that we see industry-based disclosures as an important consideration, not only because we believe that there are cost-effective decision useful for investors in and by themselves as SASB standards, but also because they can be an important consideration for our thematic research project on what we call BEES, biodiversity, environment and ecosystem services, and human capital together. So maybe I'll start with BEES here. It was striking that nearly 40% of the SASB standards metrics are nature related, and more than 80% of them have at least one related metric to this natural capital one way or the other. Some of the metrics are common across a number of industries, whereas some are unique to surface specific information to a particular industry. And we, for instance, considered the example of water management, and water is undoubtedly one of the very significant aspects to consider in this particular thematic research. Water stress can lead to degradation of ecosystems as well as the loss of ecosystem services with clear possibilities of altering, affecting the prospects of companies. Water scarcity, whether this is through shortages or through regulation, can lead to higher operational costs or lost revenues for industries that depend heavily on the use of water. And we found in the conversation that more than 20 industries have actually common metrics on water management to elicit information about this this risk. So this is to highlight that there is clearly, and that was highlighted, I think, in the conversation, this topic of ensuring that the disclosure and the metrics of the SASB standards are going to be enhanced, updated to where they need to be in the current development of the space for investors and in terms of the materiality of these topics for them, and also informative of how we can really build from S1 and on S1 to explicit particular items that might be material for investors. And the same in many aspects, I guess, applied for human capital. If you want to say a word about this too, please.
Sure. And so what struck me on the human capital side of things is that over 70% of SASB industries have at least one human capital related metric. And that's important because, you know, people talk about the ISSB as though we've only got climate requirements, disclosure requirements, and we already refer to the SASB standards, and there's lots of materials in here that is really useful to be reminded about. But we're looking at this in the context of the new research project and what we've got to build on. And so we were looking at what we're sort of doing a stock take of what we already have, and that showed that the topics that we have metrics on include on workforce health and safety, labour practices, employee engagement, diversity and inclusion, and labour conditions in the supply chain. And if you look at, for example, workforce health and safety, that topic exists in 27 of the industries in the SASB standards, and there's a common metric that's used to measure safety incidents in across different industries. So that was interesting. But also interesting to see some really sort of bespoke or tailored metrics for particular industries, such as for the chemicals industry, where there's metrics that are designed to provide information about employees in chemical manufacturing facilities that face very particular risks resulting from exposure to harmful substances over a period of time. And so I think it was just a really helpful context for a stock take on what we already have as we think about what we need and what we might be able to build on in our existing literature and what new things we might need. We also had a look then at two of the SASB standards that we're working on to enhance. So as people might remember, we're looking at these themes, nature and human capital, and then we're looking at a deep dive into some industries that we're prioritising to enhance the SASB standards. And so we looked in detail, a bit of detail, at two of the extractive industries, the iron and steel producers standard and the metals and mining standard, to just get an overview of the content, to remember the structure of the SASB standards, the use of disclosure topics, to look at some disclosures that are common over a number of industries, but also some differences in metrics, and really looking at potentials for enhancements there. And our punchline here, for those of you wanting to know what this all means for you, we're working through enhancements and thinking on enhancements at the moment on the SASB standards, and our aspiration here is to put out an exposure draft, which will give you all the opportunity to provide your input on what we propose to enhance in the SASB standards in the first half of 2025. So keep watching this work here. That will be where we are hoping to end up. So that was, I think, a really good board week to set off the new sort of September season and to help us progress on our work plan. And if we look ahead, Emmanuel, what do the new next few weeks have in store for us at the ISSB?
Thank you, Sue. Yeah, really interesting conversations here in Frankfurt this week. More to come immediately with the Transition Implementation Group meeting here tomorrow, where we'll cover that important meeting, of course, with a separate podcast. So stay tuned. I won't be commenting on that particular podcast. Also, just after that, the IFRS Foundation will be hosting the World Standard Setters meeting in London. A number of us will be there. It's an important opportunity for us, of course, to engage with national standard setters globally, many of whom are working on plans to use the ISSB standards in their jurisdictions. Some, of course, are in our jurisdictional working group, others in the Sustainability Standards Advisory Forum that gathers about 15 of them. But always a big, interesting conversation around those. Personally, I will be in New York for Climate Week next week. Check out our website for a list of events we're hosting with partners if you're planning on being there. And stay tuned with, as I just said, maybe a couple of interesting announcements that continue to build the infrastructure that we see is needed to ensure the global adoption of the baseline at speed and momentum, as we have been so grateful to see for our work and support for our work to this point. I think that brings us to the end of this month's podcast, Sue. We look forward to updating you all who listen after our October board meeting. Thank you.
For the latest developments from either the International Sustainability Standards Board or the International Accounting Standards Board, make sure to subscribe on the IFRS Foundation website, www.ifrs.org. If you enjoyed this podcast, please take some time to rate, review, and subscribe on your preferred podcast player.